Hello, everybody. So we're going to be switching gears a little bit and talking about some of the research. I think the last three presenters touched on the importance of the juvenile justice system and working with adolescents. And I'm going to present some of the research that we're doing that kind of sets the stage for some of this type of work. The title of my talk is Impact of Adverse Childhood Experiences on Substance Abuse and Emotional Distress Among Female Juvenile Offenders. I don't have any relationships to disclose. So adverse childhood experiences are stressful or traumatic experiences, including abuse, neglect, or household dysfunction. This dysfunction could be parental substance abuse, parental incarceration, things like domestic violence. And there's a lot of studies that are going to be presented, talks tomorrow, that are going to be documenting some of the original ACE research that came out of the Kaiser cohort study. And that's a study that started about the mid-1990s. And the research from that study and behavioral surveillance since then has really shown that adverse childhood experiences have an extremely strong dose-response relationship with a lot of health outcomes. A number of chronic diseases, substance abuse, mental health, other behavioral health problems, sexual and reproductive health problems, and it continues into sort of lifetime stressors and things that over time then become adversities for the next generation of children being raised. So that original study kind of hypothesized that the mechanism by which childhood adversity is affecting these adult health outcomes is that this chronic stress, or what the American Pediatric Association often talks about as toxic stress, when it's ongoing, there's actually disruption of neurodevelopment. And there's a lot of recent research, if anyone is familiar with this area, a lot of studies coming out right now documenting those changes. And it's quite fascinating and supports this idea. And over time, there's cognitive impairment, emotional impairment. And as these children age, they start to develop coping mechanisms. We all know that a lot of the behaviors that we develop started during adolescence, both our healthy behaviors and not so healthy. And a lot of these kids begin to cope by what? What do you think they do? Yeah, so they start initiating substance abuse. We start to see some of the psychological effects really manifesting themselves. We start to see experimentation maybe sexually with multiple partners. And so some of those behavioral, that kind of foundation begins during adolescence. And then, of course, that sets the stage for later health outcomes as people age. And then studies have actually shown premature morbidity and mortality. So adolescent stress and this initiation of substance use, both alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs, are thought to be really important mediators, as I just described, linking adverse childhood experiences during childhood with these health outcomes during adulthood. But most of our public health research, not all of it, but most of it really focuses on adult populations with recall of these experiences. There's an increasing number of studies being conducted with adolescents, which is wonderful, but there's a need for more research, particularly research that focuses on those groups of youth that you're serving, where we may see a lot of this chronic stress and where intervention is really possible. And one such population is those youth who are involved with the juvenile justice system. So this study focuses on girls that are involved in the juvenile justice system. And our objective was to explore the cumulative effect of ACEs, or adverse childhood experiences, on substance abuse and mental health outcomes among these young women. This study took place in two juvenile justice systems, one in Clark County, Las Vegas area, and one in Washoe County, which is in the Reno, Nevada area. So for this study, we enrolled 305 young women who had received sanctions to probation. Some were detained, many were not. And they completed an audio computer-assisted self-interview, which was very important for this study because it was confidential and they could complete the interview. The questions were asked by other adolescents. We had some team members from the Juvenile Justice Center. So they'd hear voices that sounded, you know, familiar, at least younger than ours. But they were in the confidence of being alone in a private situation. This was actually part of a sexual health study. The intent was actually not to look at childhood adversity, but we did have a number of those items. From the Ad Health study, we had a scale that's been used to look at physical abuse, sexual abuse, caregiver neglect, and emotional neglect, and this would be neglect occurring two or more times. Our adversity within the home was parental incarceration, being from a single mother, single parent, or other type of custody situation, state custody, for example, removal from the home because it was thought to be unsafe, and running away from home. These individual measures were all highly correlated with the outcomes of interest and, as we know from the adult ACE literature, highly correlated with each other. So it really is not helpful to look at one single adversity and say, this is the primary problem. We need to address this. Again, it's that cumulative stress, that sort of toxic ongoing stress from all of these different types of adversity. So as has been done with the other research, we summed a total score, and that could be from 0 to 8. Our outcomes were a range of mental health and substance abuse outcomes. Validated measures were used to screen for substance abuse. We used the BSI 18 to screen for probable mental health problems or emotional distress. We did a trend test to evaluate the dose-response relationship between ACEs and these different health outcomes. And then we also did logistic regression to control for demographic, sociodemographic variables and probation and detention. So, you know, I don't think any of you who work with this population are surprised. And if you work with adolescents involved with the juvenile justice system, childhood adversity was very common. These young women, about half reported physical abuse, 13% sexual abuse by an adult. Caretaker neglect was reported by about half, and physical neglect 13%. 71% had either a mother or father incarcerated that they were aware of. Sometimes they weren't aware of that, so that's probably an underestimate. 63% were in a single parent or an other custody situation. 18% had been removed from the home, and 67% ran away from home. So if you look at the cumulative ACE scores, this is what it looks like. Majority have at least one adverse childhood experience, which you probably could see from that previous slide. And about half had four or more adverse childhood experiences. So again, a lot of, not just one experience, but a lot of different experiences. Because we had such low variation in that we didn't actually have a large population that didn't have any adversity, our low adversity group is 0 to 1, and that is our referent group for analyses compared to those who had 2 to 3 adverse childhood events, 4 to 5, and then 6 to 8. So first we'll look at substance use. So what you see here is the number of ACEs as they, you know, as they increase from 0 to 8, and the prevalence of, this is just alcohol use in the past 6 months. And so for those who have 0 to 1 adverse childhood experiences, 40% had used alcohol in the last 6 months. And as you kind of move up, as the ACEs increase, you see that that increases all the way to 81% with those with 6 to 8. You see a similar situation, and again, it's a significant trend for recent marijuana use. 31.91%, not a big difference between the 2 to 3 and 4 to 5 group, a slight difference, but then all the way up to 73% for that higher group of adverse childhood experiences. Prescription drug use, this is less frequently reported. This is non-medical prescription drug use, but certainly troubling to see that, you know, as soon as you get above 2 adverse childhood experiences, you're looking at 20% of the sample using prescription drugs, 34% using, you know, non-medical use of prescription drugs in the past 6 months. And in terms of the scoring of the likelihood of a substance abuse problem, and again, this is a very common issue in the juvenile justice system, you see a real strong relationship, especially at that high end of ACEs with, you know, over 80% of those basically with 4 or more adverse childhood experiences meeting that cutoff where a substance abuse problem is likely. Now turning to mental health, the first variable we have is suicide ideation or thinking about suicide. 15% with those 0 to 1, and that goes up to half of the group with a high number of adverse childhood experiences. And only 4% of those with 0 to 1 had attempted suicide with intent to die, and this is a serious attempt where there was medical intervention, compared to 40% with 6 to 8. And with that brief symptom inventory, which looks at anxiety, depression, and somatization, we have a global score where people can meet a clinical cutoff for emotional distress. Only 8% of those with 0 to 1 ACE met that clinical cutoff, but that goes all the way up to half of the girls that have 6 to 8 ACEs. So these are just two of the variables. Actually, all we modeled all of the substance use variables and all of the suicide and emotional health variables. But as a kind of an overall summary of the substance use, that's in the blue square. You see that compared to those who have 0 to 1 ACEs, those with 2 to 3 had about 3 times higher odds of having meeting that classification for a substance abuse problem being likely. And that odds ratio increases to 9 with 4 to 5 ACEs, then 12. This is just something we don't see very often in epidemiology. It's such a strong effect, particularly with a small sample like this. You see a similar relationship with emotional distress, although this lower group, the 2 to 3 ACEs, did not remain significant when we adjusted for age, race, probation, and detainment. So ACEs were very common in this population, which I don't think is surprising. Because we found this strong dose-response relationship, we think that there's a lot of things you could do to address that. So if we could get the ACE score down, instead of 50% of the population over time has an ACE score of 4, what if we were to get that down to 30 or 20? We'd have a profound public health impact over time. Because of this dose-response relationship and this cumulative effect, intervention is very important. We had some limitations. I'm going to talk about some of the recommendations in a minute. We definitely had some limitations. This was existing data, as I said, from another study, a sexual health study. So several important ACE variables were not included, such as parental substance use, domestic violence. We're doing subsequent research where we're looking at when we've adapted those tools, and those things are included. The measure we used for abuse and neglect may have underestimated this outcome because the tool used only looks at neglect up to sixth grade, and these kids were 13 to 17, so it probably underestimated that variable. And the cross-sectional nature of the data limited our ability to look at temporality. So based on these findings, we believe that preventing or addressing ACEs among female juvenile offenders could have a profound impact on substance abuse and emotional distress. And of course, these are two really important outcomes for the future of these young women. Screening for ACEs at intake could be a feasible approach to identifying adolescents who could benefit from interventions. The juvenile justice system, we did a similar thing with all their outcomes. So for them, we said, well, this is what the ACE score looks like if you look at the number of referrals into the system, if you look at recidivism, and you have the same dose-response relationship. So they were really, excited about that and maybe doing more ACEs screening as a way to prevent juvenile reoffense. Family-centered interventions that focus on ACEs and trauma-informed programs are urgently needed for this population. There's also a need to look closer. We're doing some research now looking at internal and external resiliency and what areas could moderate this relationship so we can develop interventions that could build youth resiliency. It's also really important, I didn't show this data, but we have sexual health outcomes, and about 25% of this group of young adolescents had already been pregnant. So if we can work with them now, we can potentially affect the future transmission of ACEs in their families. I'm not going to spend much time on this, but the American Pediatric Association has some really great policy papers, I think, that sort of frame this issue in a public health approach. I've been really focusing on, some of the research looking at, the outcomes in health and well-being, but there's really a need to look at policies, as you guys are doing. A lot of states are doing a lot of policy work, ACE-informed prevention across their systems. This is something that can unite chronic disease, infectious disease, substance abuse, all areas of public health. and a lot of kind of work at the front end. Our juvenile justice systems are working very closely now with our schools, and we're looking at linking our data and doing some more ACE-informed work at the front end earlier on with kids before they start being referred into the juvenile justice system. Definitely want to thank all the assistants from both juvenile justice facilities. They're wonderful to work with, and they're very proactive, and they want the best thing for these youth. They want to keep them out of the system and keep them and their families healthy. And then these are the funders for some of this work and for our future work that we're working on right now. And I'll take questions after.